This is continuing with the tapes for WOSL Orange County Unit, and I am going to interview Alice Nordby, and I will let her tell you who she is.
Yes, I'm Alice Nordby. I resided in Los Angeles at the time of my that I went into the service. I took my oath of office on February the 23rd in 1942 in the Army Nurse Corps Reserve with the second lieutenant rank, a relative rank, because it came under the Red Cross and we were not regular Army. The oath was taken at the Federal Post Office Building on the 14th floor in Los Angeles, and by Lieutenant Colonel Allen from the Medical Corps. He was in charge of the Southern California Medical Military District. And I served, the unit was activated in March of 1942, and my date of separation was February 4, 1946, so that was just short of 2 years, 4 years.
What unit did you serve, what unit did you go overseas with?
We were with the 73rd Evac Hospital, and it was organized in the summer of 1940 by Colonel Albert McEvers. He was the commanding officer, but it was not really activated until January of 42.
And where was it activated?
It was activated in Los Angeles, and there were a staff of 52 doctors and about 52 nurses. The doctors all came from the Los Angeles County Hospital and or affiliated staff from the hospital, that were in the local area. And the nurses all came from the major hospitals in the local area. When we were activated, we went to Camp Luis Obispo in March 16th in 1942, and we were there for 53 days. We were went up by train, the whole group of us, and we had, at that time, our salary was $70 and subsistence and clothing issue. And while we were at this, at the Camp San Luis Obispo, we received, of course, our immunization for smallpox, typhoid, tetanus, and yellow fever. And we had our clothing issues. Are you interested in knowing
yes.
what our clothing issues
yes,
were?
I
listed them all here, and I think it's kind of interesting because we had several changes. Our original one was of the dark blue wool dress uniform, and the skirt was teal, and the top was a dark blue with a kind of a wine trim on the jacket, a braid. And we had a navy heavy overcoat, a cape, which was lined with a kind of a wine color, and the cap and the ties and all the accessories that went with that. We also got gas masks and helmets and bedrolls, canvas utility bag, canteens, mess kits, and all the equipment for a field unit. We then later received some blue seersucker dresses, like a uniform, too. We had our white uniforms. We were issued white uniforms as well.
Were they the World War One issue?
Well,
that had the long pointed collars and the
yes,
down
yes, the
front.
World War One issues, that real
the wide
old
belt.
Style with the wide belt. And, of course, they made some improvements later on. But the interesting part of it was that when we were here at San Luis Obispo, we went on a bivouac. And what do you think we wore on the bivouac? Our white uniforms and shoes. And we were dressed with those and our white shoes, but we wore our helmets and our gas masks just in case.
What made you decide to go into active duty?
Well, I was more or less recruited by some of the local doctors. I had been working in Chicago at the Illinois Research for about 6 months, and I practically froze to death, so I came back here, and they were at that time trying to recruit nurses from the local hospitals, and of course I had worked here before, so I knew some of the doctors, and it seemed that they thought I was just the right material for them to join the service, so I finally did.
Did you have any other members of your family in the service at that time?
No.
Prior to going on active duty, you had been working as a registered nurse.
Yes, I worked as a registered nurse. I did private duty in Minneapolis for a while, and then I had worked in the California hospital here. But I went back to Chicago and worked for 6 months just previous to it. So I had been doing general duty there.
Did you expect any of the experiences you were going to have in the military service to further your career in nursing, or did you just
not even think about
that part of it?
I was not thinking about that at all. I just felt that I was as free as anybody else to go in, and there was no reason why I shouldn't serve as long as the other people needed to, and the boys were going and everything, so I felt it was more or less my duty to go.
Did anything that you did in the service or learned in the service help you in any way after you got out in your nursing career?
Well, I don't know that it did or didn't particularly. It probably changed my life quite a bit, because you can't go through 4 years of Army career and the experiences that we had without changing your attitude. Who knows how much it would have changed. Another thing that probably changed it, I did go through on the GI and finished my college, got my BS from USC on the Veterans Bill, so I did change that.
You did take advantage of the GI Bill.
I did take advantage of the GI Bill. It was very helpful to me.
You were fortunate to be in a place where you could do it and in a position where it was possible to.
Well, I went to work for the Board of Education as a school nurse, and my qualifications were not sufficient to qualify as it was supposed to, so I was more or less compelled to it. But on the other hand, I got my public health
certificate
through that, and I was very grateful for it. It has helped me all ever since.
Did you find that there was any discrimination about the fact that you were a female veteran as compared to a male veteran when it came to the GI Bill?
I didn't feel that there was. I had no problem whatever about using the bill at all.
Nobody ever said you aren't a veteran?
No, nobody ever had it. I never had any problem at all. I used it freely, and it only took me 9 years of night school, summer, and extension courses to attain my goal.
Because you worked all the while that you were...
Because I was working all the time.
You worked full-time while you were going to school.
Yes.
Now, what kind of housing did you have in the States?
Well, when we were at San Luis Obispo, why, we of course had lived in the barracks there, but then from there we went to Sawtelle National Military Home in Los Angeles, and there we lived in the psychiatric wards with bars on the windows, and the baths were either taken in a huge therapy tubs, or we used keys where we had to use keys to turn the water on and off, or else we had a shower room which was 8 by 8 feet in size. It contained 4 shower heads, and there were no curtains. And again, the water was controlled by the use of keys. And we had a colonel at that particular time who felt that it was necessary for us to work up our endurance, so we slept on canvas army cots. And we had that all the time. We were at Sawtelle.
We were
12 in a room, and we had our foot lockers at the end of the cot, which held all our treasures. And we had a metal wardrobe for our clothing.
At San Luis Obispo, did you have separate rooms in a big barracks, or did you have an open bay type of sleeping facility?
Well, we had an open barrack, but not as large as some of them. We had some rooms that were they weren't all the same. Some of them, I think that the one I had was only two in it, but it was a regular bed, and really had no problem there. While we were at Sawtelle, we got another clothing issue, and this was a complete new change because they changed the colors and everything. And at this time, we switched to olive drab, and we had issues of both the winter weight and the summer weight with all the accessories. And we also got a beige summer weight dress uniform, and of course we got brown oxfords along with this issue. And at that same time we also got brown and white striped seersucker, which were supposed to be suitable dresses, of which were like our duty uniform, in other words, with a cap. And
was that the wraparound type?
The wraparound type of a apron. It was more like an apron, really. And we got that issue. And during the time we were there at the Sawtelle, we functioned more or less like a station hospital. We serviced the people that were training in the Southern California area. And there were about 600 major surgical procedures as well as many fractures. And all the medical admissions were made. There were about 470 that suffered from infectious hepatitis. And they were due to prior immunizations with yellow fever vaccine containing dual human plasma.
Made by Lilly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you... what assignment did you have in the military? Were you in the operating room or on general wards?
I was on general duty for the whole time. And let's see here, I had that all written out here like I had it. But I was on general duty, both medical and surgical, and in all different areas except that I did serve as a night supervisor on medical wards when I got to Karachi, India.
What hours did you work? Did you have a...
Well, we had rotating hours. We had three shifts usually, and no matter where we were, we had the rotating shifts.
Did you move fairly frequently while you were overseas, or did you stay in one location for quite a long time?
After we left Port Ord, which we were there for 15 days again, we were at Sawtelle for 7 months. Then we went to Fort Ord, and we were supposed to be preparing ourselves again for overseas duty, and we were there for 15 days. And then we went to the Hilton Hotel in Long Beach. The nurses stayed there for 15 days, but the men, of course, had to stay on an army post. And that was before we sailed overseas. We were gone at sea for 43 days. We boarded at San Pedro on the ship Monticello. It was an Italian transport that had been converted to a troop ship. And they called it a miracle ship because it had no convoy and only a 20% chance to get there. and the destination was unknown to most of us. There probably was somebody that knew where we were going,
hopefully,
but we didn't. And there were 8,000 passengers and 700 crew. Our crew, we had a general hospital and two evac hospitals, among others, the quartermasters and engineers. We crossed the equator, of course, and had the initiation of the polywogs on deck. And there were a lot of people that got seasick. We landed in New Zealand on February 6th and were in port for 2 days there. And we had a trip out to look around. We were excited because we thought we were going to get ice cream, and it turned out to be iced milk. And it was, when we went through the Tasmanian Sea, it was very rough. We had 20 feet of high waves, and it was so cold because we'd gone south to avoid the Jap activity. And dishes were flying all around like mad. And by February 17th, we got to Fremantle, Australia, and we were there in port for 3 days. One day we were able to get into Fremantle, and one day we had shore leave to Perth. And the third day, they didn't permit us to go ashore at all. We just watched all the ships in port, and there were ships from everywhere. We were escorted by a destroyer and a plane leaving these various ports because of the activity, the Japanese activity. We landed in Bombay on March the 4th in 1943, and we had one day in Bombay. We had a chance to visit the Taj Mahal Hotel, and some of us had a little activity going on there. We saw many people that were dressed in colorful saris and well-groomed and cared for in natives, but en route we had also seen, had a chance to see the untouchables and the cripple, lower caste of Indians, and we were actually introduced to the caste system. There were so many of them that beggars were everywhere. Dirty youngsters with looked pitiful. They were just skin and bones and ulcerations on their legs, and never forget how some of them were crippled and crawling on their hands and knees. We then went to the nurses, were then sent to Pune, India. We went by way of train, and we were there for 5 days. It gave us a chance to clean up our clothes and get ourselves organized a little bit. We had some social activity there because there was some British soldiers located there. We were able to do a little shopping. This is where Gandhi lived and was on his fasting at that particular time, and he was so ill they thought he might even die. After that, we took on March the 8th. By March the 8th, we were en route on the train for 8 days going to our location in Margarita. And we traveled across India, and there were four of us in a compartment. This is quite a unique experience because there were no passageway between the two cars, so every time we wanted to eat or anything, we had to get out and get our food at the side of the train, and we would eat out of our mess kits. And also we washed our mess kits in huge containers of hot water before we got back on our trains. And our food supply was a very great deal, depending upon what the British had delivered. One breakfast we had baked beans in the canned variety and pear sauce. And of course, at each stop, there were always a lot of natives asking for boxes, and whole families would be there with absolutely no clothing. And some of the boys would be running around with just a string around their waist, and it had some kind of religious significance.
What would be the American interpretation of buxies?
Buxies would be, beggars.
Handouts.
Beggars, handout. Yeah, they wanted money. They wanted money or something to eat or something. It just, really just beggars is what they were. Of course, that's their caste, they're untouchables.
Yeah.
That's what they're supposed to do. And the untouchables are beggars. So it's perfectly normal for them. That's all they ever do. As we got nearer to Calcutta, we got into more vegetation. We saw more banana trees and bamboo and monkeys, and there were elephants in the backyards doing tour. And our train we changed to the narrow gauge trains, and we crossed the Ganges River, and then we finally got on the Burma Putra River on a boat called the Gorkha, and it was pretty small, so there were very few cabins on it, and most of the people had to sleep in their sleeping bags on the deck. There were a few cabins, but we went on this for a while, and then we finally got to Guwahati, where we stopped in a Baptist mission. It was a Baptist mission. It was taken over by the army, and it was practically a year and a day when we finally got to Margarita in Assam province from the time we went into the service. So when we got to Lido, the basha that I lived in was made of bamboo, and it held 38 nurses. Actually, this basha was later converted to the hospital ward. And when they were able to make more buildings, as they were building all the time, these wards that they turned out to be wards, then they became hospital, part of the hospital. And that took to April 26th for the hospital to open. And so we moved into our new bashas a few days before that, and we then had two to a room, and a washroom at the back, a kind of a washroom at the back. But in our original buildings, we were 38 of us in the basha. To begin with, and we had our bedrolls as mattresses, but we did have beds with springs on it. We had beds with springs in, but we had our sleeping rolls, our canvas sleeping roll and a sleeping bag on the cot, on this bed with the single bed with the spring.
And all of your clothes in the sleeping bag?
No. We had our foot lockers. And we finally got some metal things that to wardrobe things to hang our clothes in. So we did have that. And we were, we had slit trenches all around our area, and we were always alerted for Jap patrols around. We started a Chinese class in April too, soon after we got there, and we serviced mostly troops that were in the in this area, and they were most of the patients were Chinese soldiers, and we had interpreters that were available attached to these units. And we had a lot of malaria and dysentery and tropical ulcers and a fever called Tutsi Maguchi, or scrub typhus. And it was a very difficult disease to control. It was caused by a mite, of course, and if the Americans or the white personnel got it, it was practically almost fatal. But the natives seemed to be able to shake it off better.
Did you have combat casualties there too, or was it just mostly medical?
Mostly medical here in this area. We really didn't have an awful lot of combat. Most of ours was connected with people who were in service and in the building of Legal Road, and there were quartermasters and engineers. They were building this road all the time, you know, for the Legal Road. So we had a lot of diseases, mostly medical diseases or accidents that happened.
I can remember reading about the Lido Road.
Yes.
And apparently it was quite an undertaking.
Yes, it was over 1,000 miles long, you know, when it finally finished. But it was quite a place.
I wonder if it's still in use.
I don't think it is. You know that from the time when we moved from Lido to Xingguyang, it was raining so hard all the time that it took us a whole day to drive about 100 miles. They had to keep rebuilding the road as you went along, and they had to fill it in with tree trunks and things of that nature. It rained just constantly on our whole trip up there. We went by convoy in a 6x6, you know, and it was quite a tour up there, I tell you. We were in Lido with Sam for about 1 year. We were there a year, and then we took this convoy and went up to Xingguyang, which was in the northern part of Burma. And here, it was considered a combat zone. When we got there, we lived in tents for a while, and there were four of us in a tent. And it rained so hard all the time. We had 626 inches of rain in 6 months' time. And it rained so much that they had trenches around the tents so that it wouldn't run back into the tent itself, you know. There were just trenches around. And, of course, we had raincoats and rubber boots and which we lived in.
What was the temperature?
It was very hot. In fact, sometimes we'd get so hot that we didn't care whether we got wet or not, because you couldn't stand it.
It was not comfortable in the raincoat.
Yeah, the raincoats just got. We had raincoats that were the size for men anyhow, so they were always very big. We had, it was an interesting place though. This was in the thick of the jungle, and it was very beautiful. And we had a lot of monkeys we could hear running around. Before we left, they finally had built us some bashes. But we were so far out in the jungle that we were almost afraid. And our showers were built outside in little tents, you know. Everything we had to, you know, to go to the bathroom, we had to walk about a block, you know.
Oh, yes.
And at night, it was very scary, you know. You didn't really go to the bathroom at night.
You hoped you didn't have to.
Anyway, you could hear all kinds of animals, jackals and animals and monkeys chattering away. So we were really kind of afraid. And of course, it was so muddy up there all the time that we had to make bamboo walks. You know, instead of sidewalk, they had bamboo walks. So when you walked along those bamboo walks, you get a little rat-a-tat-tat, you know, as you walked along. After a while, they decided that this was the worst living conditions that any nurses ever had lived in up here in Burma. So quite a number of the nurses were transferred out, and some other people too. But I was one of a group of about 10 people that was transferred to Karachi, India. And then I was assigned to the 181st General Hospital. And I was there for a total of 9 months, including 2 months that I had that I went to on a detached service to Sabato, India, which was a U.S. Army rest camp, number 3. And that was a real interesting and wonderful rest to get there. We had one doctor there and two nurses and a bunch of corpsmen. And we had wonderful food. We had bearers take care of us, and we were real happy to come out of the jungle and be able to go up there to that place.
Was your weather better there?
Oh, it was great. It was just really wonderful. We, of course, when we went to Karachi, we had been in Burma, you know, where we had 626 inches of rain in 6 months' time, and I couldn't tell you exactly what the temperature was, but when we got to Karachi, of course, we never had rain ever, and the temperature ran about 120 degrees. But you see, Sabato is up in the Punjab area. And so we were up in the Himalayas, and we really had this was a real vacation.
Were all the personnel allowed to rotate through this detached service, or just did it?
Well, not everybody. The strange part of it was, you know, that the nurses didn't seem to want it. A lot of the nurses didn't want to go there. This friend of mine, Dorothy and I, had been together the whole time, and we thought it was great. But they had offered these assignments to some of the nurses that had been there before, and they didn't seem to want to go. But we thought it was just great. We really had a real beautiful experience there. We went to Lahore and were able to stop there in the train and see some of the points of interest in Lahore, India. And Guwahati was beautiful, and I don't know how many people have ever heard of Simla, but it's a beautiful place up in the mountains where people went for rest, the natives, you know, and not the natives so much, but the British went there. And we were able to, on our way back, we took a sort of a leave on our own and went to see the Taj, and had an experience in Agra, which was not exactly army related.
Well, that's fun too.
but we had a really wonderful experience there.
where were you when the war actually ended in in Asia?
Well, I don't know if it ever ended in Asia. They started rotating back in May, and as far as the part of India, there was not active service there, you know, and it wasn't till they had Vijay Day, you know, which I was home at that time.
You were home at that time.
By that time, and I was in Casablanca on Vijay Day, trying to get home, but we were detained there because ETO was trying to get out of there, so we were delayed there. But it took us quite a while to get away from Karachi because there were too many other people that were trying to get home from the ETO. See, the that rotation came in just about the time that we were coming home.
How many months did you spend in India?
Overseas for 30 months altogether, including transportation time.
And then you had perhaps 6 or 8 months in the American, or in
just a few days short of 4 years service. And
you got out shortly after you came back to the States?
Well, I came home in July, and then I went on duty at the Schick General Hospital in Clinton, Iowa for a while, and then I had some leave afterwards, you know. My separation date was in February of 46.
So that was almost 4 years, or was 4 years?
It was just a little short of 4 years. Actually, it was 4 years for as far as my oath was concerned, but you see, I didn't go on active service till March 16th. So.
What kind of counseling did you receive from the Veterans Administration when you got out of the service?
I never saw any of them at all, actually, ever.
This was one of the things that they make such an issue of now.
Yeah.
And apparently in World War I and probably during the Korean War, the veterans were not counseled, and particularly not the female veterans.
I never even thought about it, but I didn't figure that I particularly needed any counseling, but anyway, I forgot to turn this one on, didn't I?
Well, I was thinking in terms of what they might have told you about what benefits you might have coming, the GI Bill, do with your service life insurance, and things of this sort.
You know, we came through Fort Sheridan, Illinois, and we were just given a reassignment to go to, we were supposed to have 30 days at our home, and then we were to go to Miami on a detached service. But you see, during the time that I was home, Vijay Day came, and so our orders were changed not to go to Miami anymore, but to go to Clinton. And so then I went on active duty there, but I didn't stay very long because they would like to have had us stayed longer, but I mean, there were several people that wanted us to remain in the service, but I was ready to leave, so I didn't avail myself of that privilege.
You weren't among those those coming home from Europe.
Yeah.
Were literally shuffled out of the service at the port of debarkation. They were discharged as they got off the ship.
Oh, really?
Is what it amounted to, whether they wanted to stay or not, even some regular army, and they had to fight it to stay on active duty.
Oh my goodness, they begged us to stay on. The chief nurse at Clinton tried to get us to stay on. There were four of us that came from India, and they called us the Four Musketeers, and she just begged us to stay on.
I think there was a great deal of difference between those who were assigned to stateside hospitals and those that were just coming through the ports. because the personnel at the ports were not military. I mean, were not medical.
Mm.
And therefore, their job was to discharge everybody and send them home.
Yeah, I suppose.
What did you find the most unpopular regulation that you encountered in the service? Is there anything that particularly galled you?
I suppose the thing that I always got a little tired of was this continual hurrying up and waiting around for something, and all this regulation. You never felt like you were on your own, you know. You had to be always as if you weren't even capable of thinking for yourself at all. You know, everything had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Done some other way.
Yeah, do it the Army's way or don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were there any things that you, other than they trying to adjust to the military way of doing things, did you have any other great adjustments to have to make in going into military service, living with a bunch of people instead of living in a room of your own?
Well, I think that's always a little traumatic. We were thrown into positions where you had really no privacy for even dressing. You know, if you move into a barracks where you have 28 and 30 people in it, why, you're about as, you know, of course, after a while you get used to it. And showering and everything in such a public course. I'd been in nurse's training, so it wasn't all that strange to me.
But you'd had a period of time in between that you had been able to live as a human being with some privacy, no doubt.
Yes, I wasn't quite accustomed to that. I don't know that it was that traumatic to me.
And you stayed in nursing after you got out of the service?
Yes, I worked for the veterans for a little while, and then I went into school nursing, and I worked as a school nurse for 30 years before I retired.
If you were to counsel a young nurse coming out of nurse's training now, and there was an emergency situation in the United States, would you convince them that they should go into military service, or would you tell them, forget it, it's not worth it?
Well, I would say that it was an interesting experience. I had many very good experiences, and I had many experiences that were not so good. We lived under some very trying situations, about as rugged as anyone could possibly want to find any place. And I also had some experiences that were very pleasant and some beautiful things that we stopped. I had practically all extremes, I would say. So I think that any experience like that is certainly worthwhile.
You feel that the people coming out of nursing schools now, of course they don't come out of nursing schools anymore, they come out of college programs, would be emotionally capable of handling the situations that we were put into?
Well, that's hard to say, because our experiences in life a long time ago were quite different from what they are now, and I think that my early life, I was not accustomed to having a lot of the advantages that people have these days, and so I think that, but I think if they're really put to it, that they can do it. I do think they can. They could do it.
Now, is there anything else you want to add, Alice?
Well, I think I've added quite a bit already. I can't think of anything else.
All right. Thank you very much.